I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Did the president ever spend hours at Jeffrey Epstein's house with a victim?
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong.
As the government shutdown comes to an end, a new trove of tens of thousands of files related to Jeffrey Epstein is again raising questions about President Trump's ties to the deceased convicted sex offender. In newly released emails, Epstein said Trump, quote, knew about the girls and that he spent hours with one of them at Epstein's home. Epstein once wrote about Trump, quote, I am the one able to take him down. We'll speak to a lawyer for survivors of Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell's abuse, then to Arizona Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva, sworn into office Wednesday, 7 weeks after being elected. Today is her first full day in office.
It has been 50 days since the people of Arizona's 7th Congressional District elected me to represent them. 50 days that over 800,000 Arizonans have been left without access to the basic services that every constituent deserves.
On Wednesday, Congresswoman Grijalva provided the final signature needed to force a House vote ordering the Department of Justice to fully release the Epstein files. Then Trump's dismantling of USAID has already killed hundreds of thousands of people. That's according to Atul Gawande, who headed global health at USAID during the Biden administration. We'll speak to him.
There's not pictures of what the devastation is that's occurring right now, because it's really hard to see the difference between the 70 and 90% vaccination rate, even though that will cost millions of lives.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump signed a bill to fund the government through the end of January, bringing an end to the longest government shutdown in U.S. history. His signature came hours after the House of Representatives approved the spending package, largely along party lines, and 43 days after the shutdown furloughed hundreds of thousands of government workers, forced hundreds of thousands more to work without pay, caused the cancellation of thousands of flights, and froze SNAP food stamp benefits for one out of every eight people across the United States. Ahead of the House vote, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries rallied Democratic lawmakers and promised to fight soaring health care costs, which are set to spiral even higher under the Republican spending bill.
Now, Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency. They own the mess that has been created in the United States of America. They own it.
This comes after eight members of the Senate Democratic Caucus joined Republicans to approve the legislation Monday, even though the bill did not include Democrats' key demand, an extension of the Affordable Care Act subsidies. Meanwhile, there's growing backlash over a provision of the spending bill that would allow eight Republican senators to personally sue the government for up to $1 million if their phone records were seized as part of Special Counsel Jack Smith's investigation into the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Maryland Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin called the measure one of the most blatantly corrupt provisions for political self-dealing and the plunder of public resources ever proposed in Congress, unquote. On Wednesday, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson said he was shocked and angry after he learned of the provision and promised to schedule a vote next week to repeal it. Arizona Democrat Adelita Grijalva was sworn into office by House Speaker Mike Johnson Wednesday, 50 days after winning her seat in Congress. Soon after, Grijalva provided the final signature on a discharge petition to force a vote on the Justice Department's full release of the Epstein files.
For one individual to be able to silence 800,000 people, it's unconscionable. It's grosero. It's just not okay. Speaker Johnson purposefully obstructed my swearing in by canceling vote after vote. And the Epstein files discharge petition sat one signature short. With my signing, we move one step closer to the truth that they will try to deny, but that survivors deserve their day of justice and the American people demand it.
We'll speak with Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva on her first full day in office later in the broadcast. Grijalva's signature came as Democrats on the House Oversight Committee released three emails by the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein in which he referenced Donald Trump. In one 2019 email, Epstein wrote Trump, quote, knew about the girls. In another email from 2011, his co-conspirator and convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein mentioned that Trump had, quote, spent hours at Epstein's house with Virginia Giuffre. Earlier this year, Trump had said Epstein stole her from his club spa. Soon after the release of the three emails mentioning Trump, Republicans released a trove of over 20,000 emails from the Epstein estate. In one of them, Epstein had described Trump as a dirty businessman who was borderline insane. On Wednesday, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was asked about Trump's ties to Epstein as described in the emails.
Did the president ever spend hours at Jeffrey Epstein's house with a victim?
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong.
This comes as President Trump reportedly called Republican Congress members Lauren Boebert and Nancy Mace in a failed bid to have them remove their names from a discharge petition calling for a vote demanding that the Justice Department release the Epstein files. Congressmember Boebert was also reportedly summoned to the White House Situation Room Wednesday for a meeting with Attorney General Pam Bondi and FBI Director Kash Patel to discuss the Epstein files. We'll have more on this story after headlines when we speak with a lawyer who represents several survivors of Epstein's and Ghislaine Maxwell's abuse. Israel's carried out fresh attacks on Gaza in its latest violation of October's ceasefire agreement. Israeli airstrikes are reported in Beit Lahia, eastern parts of Gaza City, and in Khan Yunis, where some areas are also under Israeli artillery fire. On Wednesday, Israel reopened the Zakim crossing into northern Gaza for the first time in 2 months, following repeated pleas by UN aid agencies to allow food and other essential goods to flow to communities left hungry and destitute by Israel's scorched earth bombing campaign. Meanwhile, Israel's increasingly barring foreign doctors from volunteering in Gaza, like California trauma surgeon Dr. Feroz Sidwa, who says he was blocked from entering Gaza this week. The World Health Organization warns only half of Gaza's 36 hospitals are even partially functional. This is Mohammed Wael Helis, a 14-year-old Palestinian boy who's gone months without proper care for a severe spinal cord injury he received when an Israeli airstrike struck the vehicle he was riding in.
I have been waiting for surgery for 50 days, and my surgery shouldn't be delayed because I have a severed spinal cord. Also, there are thousands of people waiting for surgery rooms. I also have vertebrae fractures, and I can't breathe.
Israel's parliament has advanced a bill that would introduce the death penalty for individuals charged with terrorism against the state and against those who kill Israelis. Critics of the bill point out the law would only apply to Palestinians charged with terrorism and not Jewish extremists who target Palestinians. The head of the United Nations Migration Agency has called for a ceasefire and a humanitarian aid corridor in Sudan to help civilians trapped in the city of Al-Fashir, which was captured by the paramilitary group the Rapid Support Forces last month. The UN is also warning 2 out of 3 people in Sudan are in dire need of aid and that the situation is, quote, horrific for civilians, unquote. Women fleeing Al-Fashir describe widespread killing, sexual violence, rape, and the disappearance of their children. This is Anna Mutavati, UN Women Regional Director for East and Southern Africa.
Women's bodies, ladies and gentlemen, have just become a crime scene in Sudan. There are no safe spaces that are left. Nowhere for women to gather safely, to seek protection, or even access even the most basic psychosocial care.
A new report by the Climate Action Tracker finds the world is on pace to see the average global temperature rise by a catastrophic 2.6 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, far above the 1.5 degree limit to global heating proposed under the Paris Climate Agreement. Separately, the Global Carbon Project warned greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels are on track to rise by about 1% this year, with the growth of renewable energy failing to prevent record consumption of coal, oil and gas. On Wednesday, thousands of climate activists in Belém, Brazil, launched a People's Summit flotilla to demand urgent action at the COP30 UN Climate Summit. This is Carolina Pasquale, director of Greenpeace Brazil, which organized the flotilla of about 200 vessels.
We are actually bringing climate negotiators and climate leaders to the heart of the forest to experience firsthand what it is to live here, remembering that the Amazon is a tipping point and that the population here are suffering. We are suffering from droughts. We are suffering from climate change, from fires. This forest is a rainforest that should not burn. It doesn't burn naturally. It only burns because there is a human ignition and because the forest is drier.
Democracy Now! Will be broadcasting live from the Belém COP30 Climate Summit all next week. In immigration news, detainees at a for-profit ICE jail in California are accusing a prison guard of sexually harassing and assaulting them. In federal complaints, prisoners say a guard referred to as Lieutenant Quinn summoned them from their dorms to an office late at night with no security cameras present and sexually assaulted them. One prisoner who threatened to defend himself says he was warned Quinn would summon prison guards and leave him facing charges of assaulting an officer. Quinn was later promoted and sent to another ICE jail in Louisiana. Both facilities are run by the GEO Group, a Florida-based private prison company. Meanwhile, the brother of an ICE prisoner who died at the Moshannon Valley Processing Center in Pennsylvania is suing the government for more information about the jail's conditions and the circumstances of his brother's death. Chao Fengge, a citizen of China, was found hanging by his neck in a shower stall back in August. His family said his hands and legs were tied behind his back. This is his brother, Yan Feng, speaking to reporters Wednesday.
He filled me with great sadness to think of his final moments alone. I don't know how he could have had the opportunity to take his own life or what drove him to do so. But these sort of things should not happen to people who are in the government's custody.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. I am the one able to take him down. Those are the words of Jeffrey Epstein talking about Donald Trump in a private email written in 2018. The email is part of a trove of over 20,000 pages of documents released Wednesday by the House Oversight Committee, raising new questions about President Trump's ties to the deceased convicted sex offender. Earlier on Wednesday morning, Democrats on the committee preemptively released 3 emails from the files. In one email from 2019, Epstein wrote that Trump, quote, knew about the girls. In another email from 2011, Epstein described Trump as the, quote, dog that hasn't barked, noting that Trump had, quote, spent hours at my house with Virginia, a reference to the late Virginia Giuffre, who accused Epstein of grooming and sexually trafficking her, beginning when she was 16 years old. The Democrats released a version of the email with Virginia's name redacted, but an unredacted version of the email was later released.
In her recently published memoir, Virginia Giuffre writes she feared she would, quote, die a sex slave at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein. But in the book, Giuffre does not allege wrongdoing by Trump. She worked at Trump's Mar-a-Lago before being recruited by Ghislaine Maxwell. In another email from 2015, Epstein asked a reporter at the New York Times, quote, would you like photos of Donald and girls in bikinis in my kitchen? We're joined now by Spencer Coovin, who represents several survivors of abuse by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. We have a lot to ask you about in very small amount of time. Start off by responding to these emails that have been released. And now the latest news that the House is going to vote on releasing the whole trove of Epstein-Maxwell documents by next week, not in December, as was previously thought. Do you think Johnson get one of the Republican Congress members who are calling for the release to flip?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. And I'm not sure exactly what they're going to actually do. But remember, this is just one procedural hurdle, right? The House has to pass this discharge petition. And then once the discharge petition has now gone through, they've got to vote on the floor. Then once that vote occurs, it's got to flip over to the Senate. And then the president will then have to sign off on releasing this information. So there are times or periods in this process where it can get hung up and we never end up seeing this information. Also, remember that the most important thing that we want to see and that the general public should be shown isn't necessarily the documents. It's the videotapes and photographs that were taken into custody by the FBI at the various different homes of Jeffrey Epstein. We're talking about his homes down in the Virgin Islands, here in Palm Beach, where I'm at, as well as his home in Manhattan. That's the information that's going to speak a thousand words. That's what the general public needs to see.
Where are those videotapes? And does the Epstein estate have what many feel should the government should have taken?
Well, I believe the videotapes are in the custody of the FBI because, remember, he was arrested at Teterboro Airport, and he never had an opportunity to get back to his mansion post-arrest. And the FBI then executed a search warrant on his home in Manhattan. That is where we believe that a wealth of video evidence was maintained. In addition to that, they then executed a warrant in the Virgin Islands. We know that after his arrest here in Palm Beach, or actually I should say just before his arrest, he had a team of people that took hard drives away from the home here in Palm Beach and secreted them away. We always understood as attorneys back then in 2007, 2008, when I was representing these young victims, that they had likely taken that evidence off to the Virgin Islands to secure it. So they've got 500 gigabytes of information that needs to be released.
Well, Spencer, you had already seen the emails that were released yesterday, including the one that disclosed that Trump spent hours with Virginia. They were under a protective order by a federal judge, which is why you couldn't disclose them. Now, if you could talk about when you first saw them, what most surprised you, and whether other lawyers or yourself have seen any of the photographic or video evidence that you say is so crucial.
Well, I can't talk about things that might be protected by, still protected by protective order. What I can tell you generally is that the emails were part of a litigation that occurred down in the Southern District of Florida. And when that disclosure occurred, remember that our advocacy as attorneys was on behalf of victims to try to upend or turn over the sweetheart deal that the U.S. government had executed with Jeffrey Epstein because they failed to keep the victims informed of that deal. I only learned of it on behalf of my clients because an informant told me that I needed to rush to court because this secret deal was about to be entered. So a lot of that information was turned over in that litigation. We weren't really focused on Trump at the time, so it wasn't the focus of our investigation or our litigation back then. We were just tangentially aware that they existed. Now that the focus is on this material, I can say that there is a lot more to come, And I can say that the FBI does have more information that needs to be released.
Well, the FBI has also interviewed, as you've said, over 40 girls, some just 14 years old. So where are those interviews? And is there any likelihood that those the content of those interviews would be released?
Well, first and foremost, I would wish that the identities of those individual victims continue to be protected. Some of them, like a lot of my clients, nearly all of my clients, have remained anonymous even to this day, almost 20 years later. No one has the identities or names of my clients that I have kept confidential. So I would hope that that remains to be the case. But the contents of those interviews, in other words, what they said and who they were with and who they told police they had been with and been traded to at Epstein's mansion, we believe that that information should be made public, along with the videotapes and photographs that we believe the FBI has in their custody.
And Spencer, your response to the latest revelation that Ghislaine Maxwell, aside from getting very special treatment at the minimum security jail that she was sent to in Texas, that has shocked many because sex abusers are not supposed to be in these minimum security facilities, is applying for a commutation of her 20-year sentence?
Well, of course she is. I'm not shocked or surprised at any action that Ghislaine Maxwell takes. She's a convicted liar and sex predator. So I don't believe anything she does, and nothing she does shocks me after 20 years. She will do anything she can to trade on information that she believes she has. We've seen that now in some of the emails that this duo of Epstein and Maxwell were all about leverage. They were trying to use leverage when discussing President Trump. They continued to use leverage when they were discussing Andrew in England and other notorious individuals. And I believe that that deal was struck to transfer her to this prison before she ever spoke to the Department of Justice. Because why would a criminal and why would an attorney advising a criminal to tell them, speak to the Department of Justice when you have a pending appeal? It's asinine. It makes no sense whatsoever, unless there was a deal that was struck beforehand that said, listen, if you talk and keep Trump's name out of this, we'll transfer you to a nicer prison.
Spencer Coovin, we want to thank you so much for being with us, lawyer for a number of survivors of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell's abuse. Up next, we go to Washington, D.C., where we'll be joined by the newest member of Congress, Adelita Grijalva. It's her first full day in Congress. She has become the final vote cast yesterday for the discharge petition that calls for the Department of Justice to release all the Epstein files. Stay with us. By Deerhoof, performed in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Arizona Democrat Adelita Grijalva was finally sworn into the office by House Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday, 50 days after winning her seat in Congress in a special election to fill the congressional seat left vacant when her father, Raul Grijalva, died in March. Up until yesterday, House Speaker Mike Johnson had refused to swear her in to prevent her from submitting the final signature on a discharge petition to force a vote on the Justice Department's full release of the Jeffrey Epstein files.
In a moment, Congressmember Adelita Grijalva will join us. But first, let's turn to her speaking on the House floor on Wednesday.
I rise today the proud granddaughter of a bracero, a hardworking Mexican immigrant who came to this country for a better life, and I stand as the proud daughter of a U.S. congressman, a man who spent his entire life fighting for justice, equity, and dignity for the most vulnerable. Yeah. From working as a vaquero to serving in Congress in just a single generation, that is the promise of this country. That is the America I want to raise my three beautiful children in, Adelina, Raul, and Joaquin. Stand up, baby. Look at them. They, along with my amazing husband, Sol, and my wonderful mama, Ramona, are here with me today. Muchas gracias por su apoyo y tu amor. And thank you to la gente of Southern Arizona for making history, electing me, the first Latina, the first Chicana from Arizona to ever go to Congress. Este momento es histórico para nuestra comunidad. Es un honor ser la primera latina en representar a Arizona en el Congreso y les aseguro que aunque soy la primera, no será la última. And while we celebrate this moment today, our American promise is under serious threat. Basic freedoms are under attack. Healthcare premiums are skyrocketing. Babies are being ripped away from their parents by masked agents. We can and must do better. What is most concerning is not what this administration has done, but what the majority in this body has failed to do. Hold Trump accountable as a co-equal branch of government that we are. It has been 50 days since the people of Arizona's 7th Congressional District elected me to represent them. 50 days that over 800,000 Arizonans have been left without access to the basic services that every constituent deserves. This is an abuse of power. One individual should not be able to unilaterally obstruct the swearing in of a duly elected member of Congress for political reasons. Our democracy only works when everyone has a voice. This includes the millions of people across the country who have experienced violence and exploitation, including Liz Stein and Jessica Michaels, both survivors of Jeffrey Epstein's abuse. They are here in the gallery with us this evening. Thank you for being here. Just this morning, House Democrats released more emails showing that Trump knew more about Epstein's abuses than he previously acknowledged. It's past time for Congress to restore its role as a check and balance on this administration and fight for we, the American people. We need to fight for our immigrant communities and veterans. We need to stand up for our public schools, children, and educators. We need to respect tribal sovereignty in our environment. We need to stand up for LGBTQ plus rights, because that's what the American people expect us to do. Fight for them. That is why I will sign the discharge petition right now to release the Epstein files. Justice cannot wait another day. Adelante, mi gente. Muchas gracias. Thank you very much. I yield back.
That was Arizona's newly sworn-in Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva speaking on the House floor Wednesday. She joins us right now from Capitol Hill. No longer do we have to call you Representative-elect Grijalva. This is your first full day in office. As you took the floor yesterday after being sworn in, you spoke in English and in Spanish. This is the first time in more than half a century that a person who was elected